Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madman and talk about it.
It's Mancini. Actually.
Sorry. Vince Mancini. Go and talk about The Madman.
Madman.
Just... thank you all for listening to another episode where we talk about Mad Men. Mad Men, a show about how wives are always asking you to do stupid shit when all you want to do is think. You know?
They do.
That's
they
true.
Women do be asking.
Women be asking for stuff. And it's like, I'm sorry. Was I too serene for you? Get out of here. 5 stars and a review on all the podcast platforms, and make sure to like, subscribe, hit the subscription bell, get a Google alert, and fuck your wife. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about all sorts of fun things. We're talking about Mad Men, and our guest is an amazing human being. This man... He's a bit of a madman himself. You know him from the Frotcast. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Brendan.
Fuck you. Ah! I'm so mad.
Hell yeah. You're all right.
I haven't watched the show. I assume it's about just very angry people.
Yes, it's about men who are just like, they're so mad. Why does their wife make them do things?
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I know the show well. It's like, hey, what's wrong? Are my deep waters too still for you?
Yeah. Oh, what, were they running too deep?
Oh, so sorry. So deep, put her ass to sleep, woke her up around one, didn't hesitate to tell Ice Cube to do stuff he didn't want to do. He's just trying to roll bones. Anyways, so, Brendan... first question we have for you. What's your favorite ad?
Oh, man. My favorite ad. The one that comes to mind is there was a Little Caesars one back in the day where it was like they had some promo. I don't even remember what the promo was, but it was like this guy's greatest day ever. Mm. And, you know, he like finds money in his pocket and then a dog jumps into his arms and he's like, Sparky, you've come back to me. And then he walks into Little Caesars. Yeah, I have a brother.
That's right.
The guy turns around, looks exactly like him. Yeah. That's the first one that comes to mind.
That's a good ad. That's really good. Yeah. You know, you got me thinking.
I didn't remember it at first, but then I realized I did. That's advertising right there.
That's advertising right there. That's what it does. We're talking about it.
We're talking about it.
You know what's crazy about Little Caesars is their like motto or whatever, their slogan was just pizza, pizza.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because you usually get two pizzas for the price of one. That was
is that
deal.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, and Spencer Hall, who we did the grinding tape, we were sort of in the middle of the grinding tape series with, which is a bit on hold because of football season. But regardless, I always really appreciate his perspective on Little Caesars, which is that like they never tell a lie. It is pizza, right? So pizza, pizza. That is an accurate slogan.
Absolutely.
And then the other special they have is the hot and ready.
Yes.
And they don't make any claim of quality. It's going to be hot and it's going to be ready.
Yeah, which is kind of like, it's kind of genius because most pizzas, yeah, they're hot, but they're almost never ready.
Mm.
You know, like you order a pizza and it's just, you're just waiting. And it's like, God, if I could have made my own pizza in this time.
Especially, you know, if the Noid gets involved, he's going to slow that down even further.
That fucking Noid. I'm so tired of that piece of shit. Fuck you.
And then you get annoyed waiting for it. You think that's where they got the name?
Maybe. I always thought it was because it's like humanoid, you know?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Here's another question I have for you, Brendan. Have you seen Mad Men?
Yes, I've seen every episode.
Beautiful. Do you what are your thoughts on it? Is it a great show?
I think it's a solid B plus.
Oh, well, that's funnily enough, that's kind of what we think about it too.
Actually, I'm that's the bit, but
yes, it is.
It of the kind of the prestige TV shows of that era. I mean, it's absolutely up there, and yeah. The way it built was so different. Where I think I had to binge the first two seasons to get up to date, so I started watching during the third season.
Right,
and you know, I think I was like, okay, this is good enough to keep watching, but, you know, I'm not like loving it. Whereas, you know, those other prestige, its contemporaries, you know, like Sopranos, and I guess it's a little after Sopranos and
yeah,
Wire,
but like Breaking Bad or you know, yeah. The Wire, or basically anything on HBO.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of golden era of prestige TV. Those pulled me in right away, and I'm like, okay, I'm in. These are great.
Yeah.
Right. And Mad Men was like good enough to keep watching, but it was like, man, it didn't really start paying off until the later seasons. So I really think about it a little bit differently. And in a way, I sort of love it that much more because it really did pay off.
Yeah.
You know how so many people will say about a TV show, like, oh, you don't have to have watched the whole thing. You can just pick it up anywhere and watch it. Like, you can't really do that with Mad Men. I mean, maybe you can, but like, it's such a better experience when you have the full context and you see these character arcs. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Did you, I'll tell you this, because we watched this episode, and this has always been a show where I've never been like, I've never enjoyed it because I relate to it in any way. I've just always enjoyed the, you know, everyone like looks cool and they're drinking and men can be men, you know, it's finally where men can be men, and women are women. And it's just like, what, you know, none of this gender bendy, like what happened to my America? You know, you guys, you know what I'm saying? No, but, it was just a show that I enjoyed for a multitude of reasons, but having watched this episode, this was the first time I felt myself relate at the very least to Married Dawn, where I was...
Yeah, this is a parent's delight, this episode.
Watching Betty tell him to like go do something to help for their child's birthday party, and just watching him kind of slump and go, oh. I've never related to something more. I was like, wow, wait, maybe I should probably examine that a little more closely.
See, I think I related more to the idea of like, oh, he's gonna go build this playhouse, but like, that's the ostensible thing that he's doing, but really he's just going to go drink 12 beers in solitude, which looks fucking incredible. Just like being out in the yard, drinking like beer after beer and, you know, sort of building a clubhouse, but yeah.
Yeah. I really love.
It.
Yeah, he did it. But yeah. I love that kind of work more than anything else. There's nothing I love more than work that is like just, you know, just handy enough that you need like a strong guy to do it, but not so handy that you need like someone else to be helping. And
well,
it's like
one that tells you exactly how to do it.
Yes. Like building IKEA furniture. There's nothing I love more than just like, okay, I'm going to put on a fucking podcast or an audiobook, bump up the air conditioning in this room and build some shelves and just like leave me alone. Because it feels like I'm helping. It's like I'm doing something for the family. And I'm enjoying myself because I don't have to interact
with
my family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know those...
You can't get mad at me for never doing anything. I'm doing something.
I'm doing something. You're not allowed to be mad at me.
Yeah. Do you know the little IKEA caricatures that they use in the manuals? Like the little fat...
Oh, yeah,
the little chubby people with
those
the pointy noses?
Guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They should have one that just has like the fedora with the upturned back and like a beer, like holding a beer.
The guy smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Like take a day, just you and this dresser have an afternoon.
Yes
Man, speaking of which, I could really use a cigarette.
I know, watching this show is like, I'll tell you, as someone who no longer drinks nor smokes, I'm watching it and I'm just going like, at least Dawn had like this outlet, you know. Like I'm just sitting here just like being yelled at about not doing the dishes interactively enough, completely sober. Fucking bullshit. But this is not a show about complaining about your wife, or is it? No, this is a show about Mad Men, and we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chose a madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, once again today, we're going to be talking about from season one of Mad Men, episode 3, Marriage of Figaro. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Sure. In this episode, which I like to call Lemon Party, the boys trip out over a revolutionary new VW ad. Rachel takes Dawn up to the roof of her department store to see some dogs, and Dawn ditches his shitty child's birthday party to go drink and
stare
watch
at
a train.
Trains hornily and suicidally. Mencken's lady, is her name Rachel?
I thought so, isn't it? Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel Mencken. Yeah.
Okay, it is Rachel. I thought for a second it was just because she was Jewish. We call that Rachel profiling.
She's Rachel Mencken of Mencken's department store.
That's right. That's right. But Vince,
she's making me horny. I'll tell you that.
You're making me horn. Well, this episode, it came out August.
She is hot, though.
She's super hot. It came out August 2nd, 2007. But what was going on at the time that this episode was set in?
I think what you're trying to say, Matt, is that we cannot evaluate art divorced from its cultural context. We got to put some of that context back in, and we do that with something. What are we calling this? Called the news machine.
All right.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Go.
Well, I didn't know where you're going with that. You just said, "Oh," and I was like, "Okay."
No, I meant like, "Oh, what about that sting?"
This is not pod yourself a gun.
Yeah,
kind of is.
Yeah. So this episode, This episode aired August 2nd, 2007, and we're going to go all the way back to when the show was set, August 2nd, 1960, or at least the year that it was set, the day right. that it was. It's, you know what? It's too complicated.
You
to explain.
Get it. The guys listening to this podcast, you get it. You get what we're doing.
Yeah. 1960. This is, we're in the buildup to the Cuban Missile Crisis right now. There's some stuff going down. There's some speculation about Fidel Castro being sick and his brother Raul might have to take over, which obviously eventually came true.
Yeah, like it took a little
four
while.
4 years ago.
Yeah. Wait, who wrote
only
this
took,
story?
It took about 87 years.
Did the CIA write this story?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this was before they tried to kill him with the itching powder and all the other
What about
things.
The poison cigar? Wait, they tried to kill him with itching powder? I missed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they were going to kill him with itching powder in his scuba diving wetsuit or something at one
like
point.
Like he would scratch himself to death?
Yeah, there was like a bunch of different ways that they
had some
to kill.
Three Stooges ass ways they did yes. a they thought about exploding conch shells like planted on the beach. They did the thing with scuba diving Vince was actually they tried to put LSD on his mouthpiece so that he would trip balls while he's underwater and hopefully just drown himself.
These guys really
they had a really good time.
They didn't know what LSD did. They were just
so
like,
there's I know. They think it was
so
put some LSD on it.
They accidentally yeah. cured his depression.
Yeah.
So guys
they had a
so
a
affected
poison
by
pen.
Dare.
They had a poison pen, which when you yeah. click it would jab him with poison. And then
That's
the
smart.
Other one I remember is literally an exploding cigar.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about when I say Three Stooges as shit.
That is straight up Three Stooges.
That one did explode, but it didn't kill him. He just got some soot on his face and his hat, the brim of his hat, mm-hmm. like bent backwards. No, they were trying to get his secretary to kill him, but then she fell in love with him instead. There was
a lot of rules. That rules. She's got such a good dick.
Yeah. So going back to August 2nd, 1960, this was a story that I didn't remember, I guess, and it just had just happened. Mm-hmm. Hunt for two cloak and dagger guys who fled down Mexico Way. It's a little tabloidy headline because it's from the Daily News. Sure. Two mathematicians who are AWOL from the super secret National Security Agency have been traced as far as Mexico City and are being hunted by the military intelligence agents and the CIA, the Pentagon disclosed today.
Two math guys are
two
on
mathematicians
are on the lam from the NSA.
They're on the lam.
Wow, they're straight up in Mexico, so they're like Eduardo Snowden. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The two, Vernon F. Mitchell, 31, and William H. Martin, 29, both of whom had been living in Laurel, Maryland, have not been heard from since they left Washington on vacation, June 25th. They said they were planning to drive to the West Coast to visit their families. After Mitchell failed to return to his NSA job July 11th and Martin did not show up on a schedule a week later, first of all, their vacation was from June 25th to July 11th.
That's
remember
crazy.
When people got vacation time? That was awesome.
I think
yeah,
you still...
So let's put a pin in that because I have a lot to say about on this subject.
Yeah. And Martin did not show up on a schedule a week later. It was discovered that they had not gone to the home of either of their parents or gotten in touch with their families. It turns out they did, in fact, defect to the USSR.
Shit.
Yeah. They were cryptologists. A secret 1963 NSA study said that beyond any doubt, no other event has had or is likely to have in the future a greater impact on the agency's security program. I
would love for us to be in some sort of multipolar world again, just so I could like have an option to like study abroad for the rest of my life.
Yeah. There was rumors that they were gay, unclear. Seems
I was
like
gonna say this
together.
Sounds gay.
It sounds pretty gay.
It sounds pretty gay.
And usually, you know, spies, I don't know, there's a lot of gay spies. Not, you know,
are there gay spies?
There's anything wrong with that. Oh, yeah.
By the way,
I mean, there were
nothing wrong with being gay or a spy.
Most
in the
60s, ones,
there was. And so I think that's just kind of what they said about
it's
people.
The
well, also,
context.
You have to realize that a lot of the intelligence agencies were recruiting from British prep schools.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they're already like kind of gay a little bit. Anyway, they defected. They both tried to come back to the US at various points and were not allowed and
wow, that's cool. I mean listen, say what you will about the political repression within the USSR, it's just nice that Americans had a nuclear power to fear. Does that sound weird?
No,
I'm just like, I feel like we don't,
you know, talks about it in this episode.
Yeah, we don't have to, like, you know, we live in a different world where we can't so easily betray America.
And or can you?
I feel like what? Am I going to defect to China? I don't even speak Mandarin, dog.
True. Yeah.
I don't even think they'd accept me.
Probably not. Plus, you'd be considered even taller there. And
I know.
You'd look weird.
Call me a freak in Cantonese.
I got one other story, more of like a fun one. This one's from the New York Times. Headline: Care of Gibbon Puzzles Woman.
Well, tell me about it.
What's this about my wife?
What is this about my wife? I don't know how to take care of this goddamn Gibbon. No matter what
I thought you were the Gibbon in the situation.
Oh, okay. I got it. Yeah, I guess I would be.
Make more sense. Yeah. She gives it to Bronx Zoo, which finds a sun lamp and bananas effective.
Wait, she gives it? How'd she get a hold of it?
Well, I'll read you the story.
Oh, okay, good.
It is one thing to be enchanted with a gibbon that is enlivening events at someone else's house in Southeast Asia, but it is something else to try
when
to cope
with one.
When
they move in with you.
To cope with one in your own home in Greenwich, Connecticut. As a result, the Bronx Zoo was the happy possessor yesterday of one of the little dolorous-looking and remarkably agile apes. It was a, I think they're monkeys, aren't they? It was a gift of Mrs. Joseph Morningstar of Cherry Lane, Greenwich. When Mr. and Mrs. Morningstar were on a tapioca buying trip to Bangkok, Thailand, she exclaimed over the charm of a pet gibbon while they were visiting friends there. Upon her return to Greenwich, she suddenly learned that two baby gibbons had been shipped to her by her husband's business associates in Southeast Asia.
Someone shipped a gibbon?
Uh-huh. One gibbon failed to survive the trip, but the other, slowly crazy. Blinking...
It's crazy that one did survive. That's wild.
Yeah, well...
We put it in an envelope.
But the other, slowly blinking its big black eyes, captivated the Morningstars and their grandchildren and provided a conversation piece. But, said Mrs. Morningstar, how does one take care of a gibbon? And the climate is different and all that, too. So that's Sunday, so she phoned the zoo and regretfully offered to turn her charge over to its experts. She drove in immediately to deliver the pet. The zoo experts went into action. They put the gibbon under a sun lamp, fed it bananas, found it in good condition, and planned to use it in school educational lectures. Mm. When it gets too big for lecture trips, they will shoot it in the head and deposit it in the
canal. What?
When it gets too big for lecture trips, it probably will be put on public exhibit with other adult gibbons, which fling themselves about in the best Tarzan tradition on bars in a cage or in trees of an island near the administration building.
Yeah. Well, I mean, shit.
That feels like a different... Imagine reading. I feel like I'm disassociating. What the fuck? That is so bizarre.
Yeah,
like
the news was crazy back then. The news is like shit was happening that you were just like, this is probably happening in some capacity in the United States, but no one's printing it anymore. You know, yeah. Like yeah. you don't hear
they
about.
They had a
like,
lot of space to fill back then.
Yeah, there was a lot of like they had really small font, and they're just like. Just ask your friends, like, have you heard anything crazy? And then they were like, yeah, I heard about this woman in Connecticut got a straight up monkey. Well, all right, let's try about the monkey.
I mean, that's an interesting story. I want to know if you got mailed two gibbons. I want to know about that.
I'm not saying it's uninteresting. I'm just saying it seems so out of time.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't sound like anything I would read today.
That's a problem with today, man. It's like, well, because of this woke culture, you can't even mail two gibbons.
Yeah.
You know, this cancel culture we have making it so that you can't mail gibbons. You get the bit. So is that it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, yeah, did you want more?
No, I always like to know when the segment's over.
Sorry. There's one more.
Oh.
I mean, this one just feels like it could have come out like a year ago. Headline, 3D film planned on Life of Jesus.
Yep, that literally could have happened anytime, but also in the 60s is the beginning, right? Like 50s, 60s is the beginning of 3D film.
Yep. Ray Stark to produce The Young Christ. Two new movies due today. A third new film version of The Life of Jesus to compete with MGM's The King of Kings and Fox's The Greatest Story Ever Told is being planned by Ray Stark, producer. Under the title The Young Christ, the film will be produced in the spring of 1961 by
it's
Mr.
like
Stark's
Young Sheldon, but about
company.
Christ.
Young Pope.
Young Pope, Young Sheldon, Young Christ.
Yeah. Young Jesus who fucks.
It's like Muppet Babies with Jesus.
So yeah, that's the news.
Well, so that's what was happening in America and the world at the time that this episode is set in. Today we're talking about an episode that I think, you know, a good portion of it, at least, you know, in spirit, is about a man who's looking at a train. And thinking about killing himself. So the Draper D story, which again, I'm not doing a song full on, you know, song every episode, but I am going to do some lyrics every episode. And this one is one of those episodes. That's the sound of madmen looking at the train. Dang, that is Dickie Whitman who wants to get hit by the train. Dang. All right. That's Sam Cooke. Chain
I love
gang.
Sam Cooke.
We're having fun.
Greatest singer who ever lived, in my opinion. But
yeah. I agree, which is why me singing it sounds worse almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, him and Aretha, you know.
Aretha. Wow.
She had some pipes, you know.
She had some pipes. So let's talk about this episode. What are our general thoughts? Vince, what did you think of this episode?
You know, Matthew Weiner, first of all, I will say that after last week's episode, which I don't know, I can't believe I kept watching after the show after that one. This one sort of brought me back again. I was back in very much like The Sopranos was a show that made you sort of pine for the mafia and then made you feel bad about pining for the mafia. This, you know, you can see Matthew Weiner's Sopranos expertise at work here, where he makes you pine for the past and then immediately dunks on you for pining for the past. It's all about the little push pull, like getting drunk, building a playhouse, slapping other people's kids, disappearing in the middle of the party, sleeping in a car. You know, it's engineered for maximum. Those were the days. And
for sure.
I appreciate that. I feel like it's also trying to do some kind of an art with the VW Lemon ad and Dawn and Rachel and possibly The Marriage of Figaro, but I don't really know anything about The Marriage of Figaro. So I don't know what kind of art it's trying to do, but it makes me think, boy, the 60s, crazy, huh?
Crazy times. Brendan, what did you think of this episode?
I really like it. I'm kind of with Vince, where the first two are obviously setting the table, which is, you know, understandable. It's a complex, you know, world. And like I said, where it pays off later, like he's laying so much of that foundation now. But it's also very easy, I think, to watch those first two episodes and go like, okay, I get it.
Right.
Everyone like smoked and drank and people were really demeaning to women. Like, I get it. Is this saying anything new?
Right.
And I actually remember almost bailing on it, like I said earlier, because it was just like, it's like, what is this saying that hasn't already been said a million times? What is this telling us that we didn't already know? And so I don't know. I thought this is where things kind of took a turn where you're like, what the fuck is this guy's deal?
And
it, while there was the quick shot in the first episode of his Purple Heart with Dick Whitman on it. This is kind of the first time where you see that really play out, where the guy goes, you know, hey, Dick Whitman on the train, and he looks very uncomfortable.
That's interesting. I didn't catch that, but is that in the pilot you see his Purple Heart where it says Dick Whitman on it?
Yeah, he grabs something out of his drawer and it falls out.
Oh, that's interesting. I missed that. But yeah, for me, this was the first time that, you know, I think most people saw someone calling him by a different name. And it was the beginning of like, okay, we're getting a little bit more information behind who this
guy
is. Yeah,
dude did the Ned Ryerson on his ass.
Yeah. Needle nose. Ned the head. Come on, buddy. I love that guy. But yeah, in this episode was for me the beginning of, oh, this is a prestige TV show. The show is doing more than just being like a period piece, you know? Like, I feel like this show easily could have been Downton Abbey. And as you guys know, I love Downton Abbey. But what I love about it is that it's essentially a soap opera with like the best fucking period piece clothing ever. And I can ride with that. I'm down for something like that, obviously. But this episode kind of taking place in like having two parts, like it starts out with the work life stuff and then the home life stuff. And it's the way that both things are paced, one in which Don is like the master of his own destiny and is someone who can, like, you know, charm the pants off of a lady boss. And, you know, fucking everyone's just sucking his cock at work, you know, and then he goes home and he has this like disaffected, emasculated thing where he's doing what essentially is called being a dad.
Yeah, but living in the suburbs where it's like, okay,
yes,
I don't really like any of these people that much. None of this is the
I hate everyone here. But I also hate everyone at work. But at least I have the power to destroy them, you know. And just at home,
they have to respect him.
Right, exactly. They have to respect him. At home, it's like, you know, his neighbors and shit are just people who he has no interest in earning their respect. He does not care if they live or die. All he can think about is, you know, the little dramas in his own work life, because, you know, at this point and continued on for decades later, America becomes more and more about how your work life is more important than the rest of life. Mm-hmm. And he has trouble getting out of that headspace. Also, he's so horny he could die, which I think is something we all relate to. But yeah, we start off this episode with
also
him.
I would just add one note you said about, you know, going home and feeling emasculated. There's a scene and they're not talking directly about Don. They're actually talking about the divorced woman neighbor. And one of the dads says, oh, those hens are going to peck her to death. And so, you know, I thought that was important because I think that's probably how Don feels, right? Yes. He feels pecked to death.
Again, it's sort of like it sets you up to be like, wow, these guys, their wives call them at work to ask them what they want for dinner. And they're like, oh yeah, throw a ribeye in the pan with some butter, which by the way, I feel like it'd be a T-bone in 1960, not a ribeye, but that's just a food criticism.
What can you do?
But, so you think like, oh man, these guys have it easy. Like he gets to go carouse all night and he wakes up drunk, half drunk still. And his wife's like, oh, I put a bacon, egg and cheese sandwich on the range for you.
Yes.
And then she like leaves to leave him alone. And you're like, wow, looks amazing. And then even with all that, you're like, yeah, this whole suburban like playhouse building fucking kids birthday party existence is still boring as fuck. Even when you're like the unchallenged king of the roost like Don Draper is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think like I would have thought that a show about suburban malaise, doesn't matter when it's set, would be like not all that interesting to me. But there is something I think what this show excels at is not over dramatizing the malaise and kind of making it incredibly realistic, because what's going on with that kid's birthday party is as simple as Don has other things on his mind, is so annoyed that he has to do literally any emotional engagement. And physical engagement he's like okay with because he can get drunk, but as soon as he has to talk
has
to somebody,
small talk with a bunch of putzes,
and that to me is like it's that kind of minutia that I'm like, yeah, this is
truly
my shit.
You really don't understand you don't really understand suburban malaise until you have to hang out with like other parents of kids your age.
Yes.
That's when it really comes clear, because it's just like you're stuck hanging out with these people that you didn't choose to hang out with. Like they are just, you know, these like funhouse mirror reflections of you, because you both have kids like the same age at the same time in the same place, but you fucking hate all of them.
Yes. And they feel the same way about you half the time.
And it's just good
like
for them.
No, yeah. And rightfully so. It's just like the amount of forced socializing that you have to do. It's funny to consider it in any way a sacrifice of anything at all, because it's really just being like a person, but it is like incredibly draining to be at a kid's birthday party and be like, oh, you know, that Annie over at daycare, she sure does take good care of them. You know? Oh, I hear they watch too much TV. Oh, you can't have that. Can't have that. It's just like, oh,
yep.
God. Yep. Yeah, it is. It's terrible. We start off this episode with him on the train heading to work. And, you know, that you get the sense in the kind of continuing train motif, how much leaving his home excites him.
Did all the trains in this episode make you think of your mom?
Fuck you, bro. Jesus Christ. I'm getting henpecked over here. I like that he's, you know, that he's excited to go to work almost like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he puts on his, you know, suit and tie and he gets his briefcase.
I mean, it had to be like a full hour train ride, by the way, right?
Yeah.
Like all the way up in Westchester to the heart of Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah. And he probably loves every fucking second of it. He's mostly being left alone and he's getting to read his paper. And then a fucking guy shows up out of nowhere and is like, Dick Whitman,
mm-hmm.
Dick Whitman from Korean War. What are you doing over here? I don't think they say Korean War, but...
No, but you're left to assume.
Fort Sill.
Yeah, you're left to assume that he's, was in the service. So you're getting more and more bits and pieces about him. And he's kind of making small talk with him and, you know, it kind of tells him nothing about himself. And then is like, yeah, I'll call you. Sure. Maybe we'll hang out, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny because this
we
guy...
We can reminisce about Gear Necklace Pete.
Fuck. Yeah. Yeah, you can reminisce about that slur laden McMahon.
You can cut that, but
no. This is a good name. He's, you know, clearly not gonna like hang out with this guy. But he's mostly just like you see for the first time Don scared of something and you're not entirely sure what it is. You just know that he has a different name than he says, and that could be for a multitude of reasons. Okay, so we get to the office and Pete is back from his honeymoon and everyone is being real nice to him and he's confused, and they play an office prank, one of those classic office pranks.
Yeah, I have so many questions about this prank.
Yeah, and I have a clip of it.
Thanks, everybody. When did this place get so friendly?
I guess people missed you.
Close the door! Close the door! Banana!
Who put the Chinaman in my office?
Okay, so who put the Chinaman in my office?
Yeah.
Is this a reference to something?
Yeah.
Is this...
Do they just rent out Asian people somewhere that you can just like...
Is that their job?
Yeah, what?
Are they like, you can like go to, you know, the classified columns and it's like Chinese... Men,
Chinese for rent.
Chinese for rent, we'll, for office pranks. We'll pretend.
We'll bring own chickens.
We'll bring chickens. It is such a strange bit, but it leads to a slew of racist Chinese jokes that are kind of, I mean, they're bad, but they're kind of great.
They paid an Oriental family to be in Mr. Campbell's office.
Someone will finally be working in there.
I want the Chinaman out of the building by lunch.
I'm still waiting on my shirts.
Sorry about that. I took the Chinese out of the building, but I have a feeling in an hour I'm going to want to take them out again.
Just like, you know, these are peppered throughout, you know, this first half sequence. And I truly don't know, like, even like thematically on an abstract level, what the point of it is other than for laughs, which I'm okay with. You know, but I am also just generally confused about the entire thing. Well, about what this is in reference to. Is this a bit we all know?
Like a classic prank, you're saying? Like,
yeah,
classic
Chinaman in his office?
Yeah, is this a classic prank? Like, if
I've never heard of this prank, but you know,
I'm putting myself in his shoes. And I have no idea of the context of this bit. I open it up and I see, you know, the unpreferred nomenclature Chinaman in my office. And then my first response wouldn't be, oh, it's this classic prank.
I'd be like, where did you get them?
Yeah.
How much did you pay them? What did you tell them? Yeah. There'd be a lot of questions.
Yeah. It's so strange. It's very funny, you know, in a racist way, but I just, did anyone do any research on that? Chinaman in my
I didn't research that. I didn't office. Know that was a thing that you could research.
You just Google it, you know what I mean? I'm looking
I wonder if that came from a real anecdote or
it
something.
Has to, right? It has to be. Nobody's saying anything in my quick Google search. AI wants to sell me crypto though. That's cool.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
I'm really glad Google switched over to AI assistant. Just very helpful for all of us.
I did find someone on Twitter Finally watching Mad Men. I don't like it. Especially don't like the joke in the third episode where they hire, quote, Chinamen with chickens to sit in the office as a prank. Yeah, it's a period piece, but there are 100 other non-racist pranks they could have written, but they went with that one.
Well, I hate that take.
I agree with her in the sense that it's a prank that raises more questions than it answers. But I don't think the idea of an office full of white advertising dudes being racist was in 1960 was the problem.
Yeah, I guess when they say there's a what I take issue with is, well, there's a bunch of non-racist pranks, and it's like, well, no, I'm okay with them doing racist pranks. I think the question is, if that's not a reference to anything, then it is played purely for laughs right. at racism. Yeah. In which yeah. case, yes, that is a problem.
Yeah,
but if
yeah,
this is if this your is excuse, a reference,
if you had a series of Chinaman jokes to make, and you needed a jumping off point yeah. for which to make them, which it does sort of seem like maybe they did, but I bet it came up in research or something. I don't know.
I'm just thinking I'm missing an old advertisement that yeah. this is referring to, and you know, if you're out there and you know the answer to this. You know, email us frogcast@gmail.com. Tell us, what does this mean? And if we can't find anything, then yes, that take is mostly correct. That is just racist as shit.
So I feel like this gets at one of the phenomena that we really enjoy observing on the Film Drunk Frogcast, patreon.com/frogcast. Mm-hmm. Which is the person who watches Scarface and thinks that Tony Montana, the lesson is that Tony Montana is like really fucking cool.
He's a cool guy. Yeah.
It's the same thing in my opinion where it's like, man, they made some racist jokes on there. That's messed up, man.
That's not
it's
cool.
Like, yeah. It's like 1959. Like what the fuck? Yeah.
It's true. That is the flip side of it. It's both the same type of personality. One in which someone is like, yeah,
it's the no ability that thinks every depiction is an endorsement.
Yes. Yeah, right.
And,
right.
And also that we're supposed to just the assumption that like, we're supposed to like these people.
Right.
And really think they're good people and agree with them on stuff.
Right.
And
yes.
It's just funny the way, I don't know, kids these days, man.
Yeah, these kids these days. No, but it's like it is the two sides of the same coin. If someone with like very little ability to critique media and sometimes
critiquing media. Yeah.
Sometimes critiquing media and sometimes it works to their benefit. Like, you know, to be honest, the people who are just saying Tony Montana's a cool guy, they're living that ignorance is bliss. You know, they may be stupid yeah. as shit, but they're having fun.
Yeah, whereas, they got like, their balls.
Yeah. Well, then you have, you
don't
know,
break for no one.
Yeah. Then you have people who don't understand the concept of like an antihero and you're just like, you have to explain like, no, we don't. We know they're the bad guy, and then it turns into a conversation of why should there be bad people in media? And you're just like, I don't know, because you're an adult.
Yeah. But moving it, like, so this sort of leads into them all pouring over. Oh, hi, Brent Flyberg.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but we need to take a break because there's a Chinese-American guy in my apartment and I got to get him out of here.
Well, all right.
I hope he finished your shirts.
Oh, yeah. did you download TikTok? That's probably what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hold on. I want to get one. Chinese food, salty. So, got him. So that's right. We have to take a quick break in order for us to continue this racist bit that we're not sure is a reference. But please stick around and we will be right back.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus Ground Chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Vince, what were you saying?
So this leads into the scene where they're all sitting around looking at the Volkswagen Lemon ad. And yes. I thought at some point that they were going to explain what was in this ad and not make me Google the fucking ad. But I don't know. The show just treats it like I'm like a fucking advertising historian. And I remember all of the Volkswagen ads. I had the same thought.
Like, are we just supposed to remember this ad verbatim?
Yeah. So I did look it
up. Half the show, by the way. Half the show is remember this ad. And the times where you do get it, you're like, oh, that was good. Like at the end of season Kodak thing, right? But then the times where you don't get it, you're just like, can you just tell me?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I learned some stuff by Googling it, which I don't know. Maybe that's added value in some way. The actual ad. So it's this full page ad. I guess it originally ran in Playboy. It's black and white. There's a lot of empty space above the Volkswagen car. Headline is Lemon, period. This Volkswagen missed the boat. The chrome strip on the glove compartment is blemished and must be replaced. Chances are you wouldn't have noticed it. Inspector Kurt Kroner did. There are 3,389 men at our Wolfsburg factory with only one job, to inspect Volkswagens at each stage of production. 13,000 Volkswagens are produced daily. There are more inspectors than cars. 3,000 Volkswagens are produced daily. There are more inspectors than cars. Every shock absorber is tested. Spot checking won't do. Every windshield is scanned. VWs have been rejected for surface scratches barely visible to the eye. Final inspection is really something. VW inspectors run each car off the line onto the Funktionsprüfstand, car test stand, tote up 189 checkpoints, gun ahead to the automatic brake stand, and say no to one VW out of every 50. This preoccupation with detail means the VW lasts longer and requires less maintenance by and large than other cars. It also means a used VW depreciates less than any other car. We pluck the lemons, you get the plums. So I was like wondering why they kind of hate this ad so much.
I get it. They're talking shit on the product, and this is something that, you know,
no,
all
they're not.
Well,
you mean the people in Don's office are talking shit?
No. The visual.
Well, they're calling the one a lemon because it had a manufacturing defect, right?
Right. That's the context. Once you read the fucking wall of text that you used to be able to write in ads before, you're just
so
like,
much.
Just put a Greek guy saying pizza, pizza. They'll get it.
Yeah. You know? No. And as a person who's been a copywriter, like you rarely get more than like 60 to 90 characters to work with. Like maybe you get to write like a 60-second podcast spot or whatever, but you do not get to write like this entire
a fucking paragraph,
five paragraph essay about why Volkswagens are cool,
about how there's so many, you know, Germans looking at it and killing one of 50.
Yeah, so like some of the background that I think is important is that like this was the car company started by Hitler and the Porsche guy. It was like still thought of as like the Hitler car company, like up until this point. And this was at the peak popularity of, you know, the Detroit automobile,
American
which
cars.
Looked vastly different than this like low horsepower, little bubble machine.
I just remembered, just quick aside and we'll get back on track, but I remembered a really good detail about the Little Caesars ad.
Yes.
I got to know it really well because my buddy had taped the movie The Best of the Best off TNT, and that ad ran during one of the breaks. Nice. So we got to watch it a lot. Yeah.
That's an important detail.
I like that you didn't fast forward through it. You're just like, no. We're watching the ad.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a good ad. That's how good that ad was.
Dude, I remember when there were ads for like Pepsi before, like, you know, the movie Home Alone on VHS. You know,
I have a copy of Top Gun on VHS where it's two guys flying in planes and like one guy has a Pepsi in like a some sort of case and he can't get it out. And so he goes inverted to pour it out into a cup.
Like a forever baked in Pepsi ad is such a wonderful thing about like, you know, analog fucking, you know. Anyways, go ahead. Yeah. Where are you guys?
So this is, you know, it's hard to understand the context, I guess, at the time, because, you know, the generation of advertising that we grew up with was probably,
it was all Geico shit.
It was heavily based on this sort of like cutesy, like brand personality, like Nuprin, little, yellow, different, like just the way that they structure those sentences. You can sort of feel the influence of Lemon, period, or, you know, got milk. Like the short headline thing. I think the 1960s ad guys would have been sort of mystified by this because their entire job was to like make the product look sexy and cool.
Right.
And they're sort of confused by this like sort of self-deprecating little bubble car with this sort of joke headline.
That's the issue is that, you know, it's despite the wall of text explaining it, like the visual is lemon and the car they're selling. Calling a car a lemon, you know, is self-deprecating and, you know, there was this feeling of this is like very much reading into it, but based on the amount of Jew jokes they do on this show, I think I'm not wrong. It's reminiscent of, you know, there was a time in which like litigation firms were Jewish because it was like the one kind of lawyering that like good blue-blooded Christians didn't do.
Yeah.
Like a very specific
too negative for WASPs.
Yes, yes. And I almost feel like this is a version of that where it's like, I don't know, some, you know, some Jewish advertising company doing self-deprecating humor. Ugh, that's not us.
There's,
you know?
Also, I also feel like this was an early example of the clickbait headline because like lemon period creates what, you know, Upworthy was designed in a lot of, and BuzzFeed and a lot of these, you know, web companies. They built their bones on, you know, creating the curiosity gap in the headlines is what they called it, where it was like, you know, this lady fucked her husband and you'll never believe what happened next sort of thing. You know, it's the lemon period headline.
Here's why.
Right.
Yes.
Doctors hate him. And it's just a guy holding his giant cock.
Yeah. Bill Cosby looks hideous now.
Or sometimes they'll do the ones that are like Google AdSense and be like, I can't believe he's dead. And it'll be like Leonardo DiCaprio picture. And you're like, well, are you allowed to do this?
Yeah.
But I click on it anyway because like maybe he's dead. They're talking about the VW ad, and then they have this meeting back with Mencken. Mencken is in the office to have a continuation of the, you know, advertising campaign conversation they were having in the first episode, and no one has been to her store.
Before we get to that, there's another little part I wanted to pick out of this scene, which is what's the guy with the glasses, copywriter guy?
I call him Glasses Guy.
Glasses guy.
Harry? He's telling
Crane. Harry Crane, yeah.
Yes. He's telling the joke and the punchline is
I have the clip of it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And I also have the clip of the Gilbert Gottfried bit that he did.
Oh, good. All right. Okay. You know what joke it's because there's a conflation of two jokes, and I was gonna point that out.
Okay, so here we go.
So the doctor says to him, I hope you're happy. While you were out finishing a round of golf, your wife was in a horrible accident. She is going to need round-the-clock care, bathing, toilet. Then the doc looks at him and says, I'm just kidding. She's dead. Hey, what'd you shoot?
Initial research.
And so I can play the Gilbert Gottfried clip. Do you want me to play it?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you, because this is one of the jokes that it's conflating, and I'll tell you the other one.
Okay, all right.
You'll have to feed her. You'll have to bathe her. You'll have to clear her out every passage. And the man starts crying hysterically, going, this is horrible. And the doctor says, I'm just f***ing with you. She's dead.
God rest his soul.
R.
What a beautiful joke that was.
One. Love him.
So it's sort of, it's conflating two jokes. The other joke that it's referencing is there's a guy, he's out golfing with his wife, and he hits his ball on the other side of this barn. He slices it way off behind this barn, and he's like, he's looking at it and he's like, you know what? I think he's like, honey, if you just open that, the door of the barn and hold the barn door open, I think I can hit it through the door of this barn. And he shanks it again, hits his wife, and kills her. And then a few years later, he's back playing the same hole with his new wife. He slices his ball in the same place, and he's walking over to it. And his new wife says, "Honey, I think if I just hold this barn door open, you'll be able to. You'll have a clear shot at the green." And he says, "Oh no, I can't do that. I tried that on this hole a few years back, and I got a 7."
That is very good. That is a very good golf joke. Oh, yeah. But, you know, what I love about this era of like humor is that it is creative misogyny, because, you know, it's like, as misogynistic as the show is trying to showcase the 60s to be, one of the ways it does it is in the types of like office jokes that people mm-hmm. would do out loud. And sometimes I'm just
three jokes in this episode.
Yeah, there's that, and then there's a lawyer joke.
There's a lawyer joke, and then
was the other one? The Chinaman stuff.
God, I thought there was another. Maybe there was just two.
I just remember those two. But there's a few jokes in this, which, hey, that's a lot of fun. Yeah. And honestly, if it hadn't been for me knowing this Gilbert Gottfried doing this bit at the, I think, roast of Hugh Hefner, I would have never heard it, and I would have enjoyed it then too. So we see in the office pitch meeting with Mencken that Don and Rachel are flirting. And Pete sees it, and he is like, for some reason, he's pissed about it. He has just come back from his honeymoon, and he like is telling Peggy, like, hey, I'm married now, so, you know.
Pete's motivations are sort of complicated and slightly confusing in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's conflicted, because on the one hand, he really likes playing house. Like, he loves the fact that his wife called and said, what do you want for dinner? And, mm-hmm. you know, he's talking to me like, hey, you know, I'm going to have dinner's going to be ready for me at home when I get home. And I love the juxtaposition with that and Don Draper waking up, you know, hungover. And Betty's like, hey, I've got a bacon and cheese sandwich for you. And he's still like, ugh, the novelty is worn off.
Yeah.
You know, I could make my own goddamn bacon sandwich. Just leave.
I guess it's sort of like Pete is still very horny for other women, and he's like trying to trying to like bury those feelings, and, yes, and because he's playing house, I guess.
He thinks that marriage is the cure for like being horny for other people.
Yes.
Which seems to be like how Harry feels, because they have a conversation later in which Harry is, you know, saying, hey, what's the big deal? Dawn turns on the charm. You know, sometimes I do that in order to make a sale or whatever. But Harry is very much like a wife guy. Like, his character is being a wife guy. And I think Pete wishes he was that, and he just can't stop himself from being a horn dog, which is kind of strange, because the way Pete is set up in the pilot as like a straight up sexual predator.
Yeah. Terrible person.
Yes. And so you don't really expect him to be anything other than that. So him coming back and like, you know, trying to be like, I'm good boy now. It does seem like a pivot in the character, but I think it's a good pivot.
There's
I think one of the things I like about Pete is he's absolutely the most fuckface weasel that you've ever worked with. Yes. Like, everyone knows a Pete, but they make him complex enough that like sometimes his motivations and his behaviors are very strange.
Yes.
But as the show goes on, there is like a consistency and a through line where you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, Pete would actually do that. And so this is actually my second time around watching it, because I, like I said, I binged the first couple seasons, then the rest I just watched as it came on, as it aired. And so, for example, I remember this episode being like, what the fuck is this guy's problem with Don? Like, why is he drinking all this beer and driving off? Like, I don't get it.
What's wrong with you? Your wife's hot.
What's wrong with this, you mopey asshole? And so now this time around, like knowing what I know about Pete and seeing this stuff, it does make a little more sense. I think if you're watching it for the first time, it's a lot to process, and you may kind of miss some of that stuff.
I also, at this stage in the show, like, they're clearly trying to make this like dueling portraits of Don and Peggy. And at this stage of the show, and I don't know if this is like sexist to say or whatever, but like, I am not as into the Peggy storyline at this stage as I am the Don storyline. I think it's less because she's like a woman, and I find that inherently less interesting. I don't think that's necessarily it.
It's not because you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's not because I'm a piece of shit. I think it's because I don't really quite know what to make of Peggy at this stage. Like, she's very sort of complicated, and I don't get it.
I find her and Pete both share that in common. They're mm-hmm. both of their characters' motivations seem to be what I would call kind of human, like realistic. Like they are now not these one-dimensional characters. They're now kind of multi-dimensional, but
they're
still
trying
a mystery.
Out different things on different days.
And like in general, I think it becomes more and more clear as the show goes on, but I agree, like the Peggy storyline took a lot of time for me because I wasn't really sure where this character was going, other than I'm sure that she is going to want like a promotion. But I wasn't sure if this was setting her up to be, you know, an executive, or if this was setting her up to eventually, you know, have some horrible, you know, violent act befall her in the office. Like,
I sort of felt the same. I felt like that's the way her storyline is less compelling, is you're like, oh God, this poor girl. She's trying to get by, and just everyone's like taking advantage of her, and like,
and you're a little worried of
how are they going to Kelly from 90210 her and make her, you know, make her be like the victim of all of the society's ills.
Yes. You're worried about how they're going to handle it, because if they're, you know, if they're as loose with the Chinaman joke, I remember the general sense of dread with her character, because I felt like they were setting her up for like all the horrible things will happen to her, and that's what, you know, but that's the, you know, that's the time we were living in, which I don't think I would have liked. Instead, keep watching the show, her character gets more and more interesting as it goes. Finally, just to end part one of this, he goes to Mencken's with Rachel, and they have all these like, you know, conversations about how they're going to change it, and about how when she was a kid, her best friends were dogs, and you know,
maybe these dogs are saying roof roof
because they live on the roof. Yeah, so she keeps dogs in cages on the roof, and they're German shepherds, which I feel is a little bit like, you know, this is for, you know, the World War II. But then he kisses.
The dogs are on our side now.
Yeah, now these are our German shepherds.
Yeah, he kisses her, and then he pulls back, which again is slightly complicated in terms of our understanding of Don Draper, because up until now, he's just sort of like shagged random women and not felt bad about it. And
right,
that's
he's
he
at least has one mistress that we know of. Has he fucked anyone else?
No, I don't think so. But in my mind, he was a cad already at this point. And I'm like, okay, I assumed he was going to be shagging Rachel Mencken on top of a dog cage. But instead,
woof, woof. Yeah, instead he pulls back and he says, I'm married. What I actually find interesting is this is still a cad move, because I think the great thing about this is that Rachel is immediately like disappointed, isn't like mad at him, but was a little bit mad at herself for not asking, because she was afraid of what would happen. And she immediately is like, all right, well, I still want us to, you guys to do my ad campaign, but you can't work on it. And
yeah,
he's like,
my second read on it was like, oh, he is a cad. And he was just telling her this so that she knows that, this is going to be like an affair that they keep hush hush.
Right. This is
going to
be a quiet affair that we have. Yeah. And she like tells him to his face, like, what did you think? I'm just going to fucking, you know, wait for you. I'm just going to be here. It basically, do you think I'm going to be your side piece? No, I'm rich. Fuck you. And he's like pissed about it. He's not happy, which I love.
It ends in one. Well, it doesn't end, but it like it contains probably my favorite line of the episode, which is he tells her like, oh, you know, I've been thinking about this ever since you stormed out of the office. And she goes, you stormed out of your office.
Yeah, I love that part. That's so funny. It's complete mystery just because he's like, well, no, it couldn't have been me. I am man.
Yeah.
Only a hysterical woman would storm out of an office.
Yeah. And a Jew at that.
Yeah. It strikes me as exactly the kind of situation misread that a dude would make.
Yes. It was very funny. Then he takes the train home and we start part two. Part two of this episode is him dealing with his home life. It's Sally's birthday and Betty is throwing a party. Don, like we said before, is drinking his fucking ass off this whole time. So even though he's not hamming it up, he is getting progressively more drunk. As we go on with this.
The joy I got out of watching him just crack beer after beer while he was building this playhouse. And I thought there was going to be like a payoff to this. Like I thought like he was going to like I thought he was going to like set the playhouse up wrong something. And a kid was going to like play in it and fall through the floor. Cause he didn't screw in the right bolt or something.
Yeah, they're
too mature for that.
Yeah, no. Instead, it's just you see him like clearly self-medicating, which is fun. And one of my favorite parts in his like chit chat.
Also, I believe like one of the only parts in the entire series where we see him drink a beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. It's mostly they're just drinking
beer. Clearly wasn't drinking, according to them. Even in like the mint julep scene, like mint juleps are. By the way, I don't know how she makes a mint julep, but a mint julep is literally just like muddled mint and whiskey with sugar in it. Like it's not like it's a strong drink. And he's like asking the other guys, like, "Hey, you pussy's gonna keep drinking this mint julep, or are we gonna have something stronger?" And then one of them gets like hectored by his wife and he's like, "Well, nope, I guess we're just drinking this shit."
Yeah, it is funny that, you know, their Smirnoff Ice was just something that's 90% alcohol and 10% mint leaves.
Yeah,
they're like, what am I, a bitch? But yeah, my favorite moment is he is he's talking to a guy who's, you know, telling him like, this is the life, isn't it? And I have a clip of that.
So how are things on Mad App, Don? Well, looks like they're taking care of you. We got it all, huh?
Yep, this is it.
The way he delivers that line with just the implicit, like, this is it. This is the best it's getting. This is all. It's so funny. It's John Hamm is hilarious in this show.
I also think this speaks to the writing of this episode versus the last one, because last one, like, there was so many jokes and like lines that I couldn't figure out. Last one was written by Matt Weiner, I think. This one is written by Tom Palmer, and that is just like an example of like the lines in this episode were like, okay, that's a scene button, I know what's happening. It made the scene better and I like it.
Yeah, there's a few of those moments in this episode, like really like a nice button to end scenes. Another one is when the divorced woman shows up and is just hanging outside with Don, who's says something along the lines of like, I forget what she says. It's crazy in there. Or it's like, oh, did you get tired of the people in there? And he goes like, it's the same people out here, while he's just watching children play.
Watching children, yeah.
Speaking of which, in that scene right before she shows up, you hear, because the playhouse is built, and so all of them are immediately playing house, so they are talking the way they think adults talk. Did you guys notice those lines?
No, I didn't notice this.
Oh, it's fantastic. Just this is kids from the 60s, from the, you know, 1960, doing what they think is adult talk.
You dented the car. I like sleeping on the couch. I don't like your tone.
I heard that you dented the car, and then I was like, wait, what the hell are they talking about? And then I saw there was a toy car, so I think I was distracted.
No, they're playing house, which is just them saying whatever mishigas is going on in their own household. I like sleeping on the couch is so fucked up. My dad says it all the time. I don't like your tone. So good. That is, if ever there was a something that your mom said to you. Oh, man. Anyways, Betty in this second half of the episode is doing a lot of work with her neighbor, Francine, who is like a mega cunt. They are hanging out. And they're just...
Just saying that because of her Jew jokes?
No. Even Betty is kind of a cunt to the divorce lady. Yeah, it is wild. Like, there's a scene... Well, first, there is that scene where she does this insane Jew joke, which I, of course... have a clip of, because it's
we're thinking about 7 days, 6 nights in Boca Raton with mosquitoes as big as a silver dollar.
And believe me, those aren't the only giant noses you're gonna have to deal with.
Francine.
Carlton and I went there on our honeymoon, and all I can say is we were outnumbered. It's uncomfortable. You want to be able to relax.
I love that you can't
relax.
There's
blood suckers everywhere if you catch my drift.
You can't relax near Jews. That is so weird.
Actually, my favorite Francine line is when she's looking at Don building the playhouse and she just goes, "Dude, that man." And I'm like, God, the bar just used to be so much lower.
Yes.
All you had to do was comb your hair while you were drinking 27 beers.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he's also born handsome, you know. So I get that. But yeah, there is this weird thing where while, Don can't stand next to a divorced woman without Betty being like, holy shit, we got to get this bitch out of here.
And she's right.
Well, she is right, but she's right for the wrong reasons. It's not because the divorced woman is going to be the aggressor. It's because fucking Dawn is a slut. But it's hilarious that her anti-Semitic neighbor can literally be like, take a shower with me in front of Betty. And I have clips of both of
those. And they all just chuckle about it.
Yeah.
That man.
I know. You didn't use the powder room, did you?
It will appear untouched.
Everyone's going to be here soon. Why don't you up and take a shower?
Want company?
Are we all going to pretend like we don't get that musical reference? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to sit here and pretend we don't know what that's from. That's Pornhub.
What's it from, Matt?
It's Pornhub.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, yeah, I do love...
That's different than the Pornhub community.
Pornhub communities have got a little bit different, but it's
got like the drum loop.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah, there's all sorts of different stinks. The divorced... single mother stuff in this episode is truly great because she comes over. It's her first time, hanging out with all the neighborhood girls. Francine is mad about it because she's just like, ew, why'd you invite her? She's divorced and is bringing down the property values. And she also walks all the time. She's so weird.
Mystified by the idea of recreational walking.
Yeah, they're mystified by the fact that she walks, which is just a fantastic detail. Betty explains that, well... She saw me getting balloons. I had to invite her because she saw me getting birthday balloons. Very funny. She comes over and they are all hanging out in the kitchen having that conversation about their honeymoons. Betty asks where you had your honeymoon, divorced lady. And she goes, oh, I'm sorry. She absolutely meant to. She was throwing shade, right? I'm not crazy. Yes. Yeah. So they're all being cunty towards her and just I love the undercurrent of like hater in their conversation. It's really good. It's really, really good. And she doesn't take the bait. And so they are only even more cunty. It's kind of wild. I have that here.
Where did you go? Oh, I'm sorry. I went to Paris. 4 years of Mount Holyoke French. Haven't used it since. And I wouldn't give it back, even being with Glenn's father.
Is that your ex-husband?
Yes.
Fuck you.
I love Paris. It's all walking.
What do you mean?
Just that I've seen you walking around the neighborhood.
I've seen you too. When I was driving, I think I waved. Where are you going when you do that?
No place. I just like to walk.
But where?
Anywhere. It just relaxes me, clears my mind. I heard on the radio that Einstein did it.
Einstein? He's got his hands into everything.
Are they implying that she fucked Einstein?
She's having sex with Einstein?
Or are they saying he's meddlesome?
It's either that or just like it's an anti-Semitic joke. I'm not sure what it is. But yeah. I know that
that's intersectionality right there when you can't tell if it's a misogynist joke or a Jew joke.
Yeah, that is intersectionality. I just love that it's like that, all that shade being thrown at her, and she is like, she's not throwing it back, but she is deflecting it in this really cool and confident way, and it just drives these hens crazy. And they are just buck 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 awking at her, and she is fucking, she's just bat bat batting them all in their little beaks. And then
I forget, is she divorced or is she widowed?
She's divorced. Just divorced, which is, it's like there are widows, right? Like there's something weird about the way in which they're weirded out by her for not having a husband, but for sure people didn't like people's husbands died. It's literally just the divorce thing.
Yeah.
Their assumption seems to be
she's a loose woman.
Is that she's a loose
unsatisfied
woman.
Well, she's also like holding a harsh mirror to all of them because because she wasn't enough of an adult to just swallow the natural discontentment of being married. And
right. Yes.
And so that's like she's making them realize like, hey, maybe I don't like being married that much either.
Right. Yeah. There's something about the like divorce. You can't do that.
Yeah. Can they do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Can they say that? But yeah.
Like when black quarterbacks started running the ball.
Yeah.
They're like, can they do that?
Can they do that? That's not fair.
Yeah.
You can't use both talents.
That's not football.
Yeah. Yeah. Football is when white guy throws it to fast black guy. I assume that's the issue.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. They all just think that she's like naturally a prostitute. And Dawn isn't really even hitting on her in that scene where she is where Betty tells him to go get the cake. He's literally just standing near a divorced woman.
He was going to try and bang her.
Of course. But in that moment, he's just drunk and like thinking about this Jewess that he's in love with. It's great because in that moment, right before that, Glenn comes in and they had just
first appearance of Glenn. Beep, beep, beep,
yeah,
beep.
We finally see Glenn, who's going to
good old Holden Wiener.
Yes. Holden Wiener is going to be showing up throughout the series in just the best, most tasteful way. He's the magical cat of the show.
He really is. Like I saw him and I just got so excited. It didn't register the first time I watched it, obviously, because I didn't know how great he was going to be, but his storylines and just the way, he's almost like an angel of death character sometimes. Just amazing. I'm just so excited. If any of you out there haven't watched this yet, just buckle up with Glenn. He's a great character.
Yeah. Huge win for nepotism, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a roll of the dice. Occasionally you get a good one. And he is just great. He's also well written, you know. He's it's one of the rare roles for a kid where you're like, this is a good use for a kid. You know, yes. Make them a mage, you know, don't just make them some annoying kid, make them an oracle. But yeah, they were talking shit about how like, oh, what did she forget to unpack her iron? And then Glenn comes in and his shirt is what I can only describe as wrinkled as any of my shirts at all times.
Yeah.
And I feel like something we've lost as a society is the giving a shit about wrinkles. But maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. Do you ever notice wrinkles on people's shirts?
No.
Like ever?
I feel like maybe if they're wearing like a dress shirt. Yeah, yes. Like a dress button up. And even then, like, if it's like an Oxford and it's sort of like more of a casual, like probably won't notice if they're like in a suit and tie and it's really wrinkly. Like
yeah. Maybe if it's one of those like Bob Craft shirts with like the sure. white collar on a blue shirt with like
the French cuffs
that like that a movie rich guy would wear. And if that's wrinkled, I would notice it because it's out of place in the context of that shirt. But otherwise, no.
Yeah, and it's just, and he's wearing like a polo shirt or a t-shirt or some shit. Something where, you, like, the idea that it would be wrinkled and they would notice is very insane to me. So Betty says, hey, Don, you know, why don't you go get the cake? And he fucking, oh, and he just moans his way over to the car. And then he just drives off. And we cut to it's like hours later and everyone's leaving.
This is another one of those moments where you're like, wow, in the 60s, you could really like your wife could tell you to go pick up the cake for the kids and you could just disappear with for hours and not expect to get immediately divorced.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or to, you know, have like a cell phone where they can be like, where are you at? You know,
yeah,
instead she's calling the bakery like, where are you? And they're like,
have you seen a drunk guy smoking a cigarette?
Have you seen a handsome drunk guy?
Are super hot?
Are you fucking my husband?
Yeah, did you fuck a really handsome guy with a side part?
Yeah. But they can't find him. And there's a line that you had me get some audio from Vince, in which the guy, once it becomes clear that the cake isn't coming, he's like, am I the only one who knows this cake is not coming? And I have that clip.
There's not going to be a cake. Am I the only one that knows that? Don Draper, you are a first-class heel, and I salute you.
What is it that you loved about that?
That, like, even then, the other dads are like, wow, he's going to get away with this? That's insane. Because, you know, that's, like, sort of our inner monologue spoken out loud. Like, oh, he really is just going to disappear on his way to get the cake.
I do love that the husband, you know, the other husbands are like, he's just gone? He's so cool.
Yeah. I wish I could do that.
Yeah. In front of the other wives, like, ah, that guy's fucking cool.
Like,
fuck
disappearing,
you, ladies.
Disappearing during your daughter's birthday party, not getting the cake and sort of ruining the party, and then coming home with a dog that your wife is going to have to take care of is just
and I forget her name, the divorcee, Bishop, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She has to save the day by getting a Sara Lee cake, which we then cut to, and it is so sad. It is like just the saddest looking cake.
Disgusting, like tinfoil cake that like has been in the freezer. So Betty can't even cut into it.
Yeah.
But also,
well, you think like how bad food was in 1960, like American food was terrible until like 1993 or something like that. So like the cake they would have gotten from the bakery, I'm sure that was going to suck huge ass.
That's
compared
true.
To anything
that
we
it
have
probably
now.
Be a bundt cake or something fucking stupid.
Yeah. So just imagining like the levels of how much worse it would have been.
Yeah.
A jello mold of a bundt cake with like fruit inside.
Oh, yes. God.
Yeah. Cigarettes and fruit and like a lima bean.
These are just honestly the most disgusting era for food in the world.
Unbelievable. I didn't read any food articles for the news machine, but there was one about how you can substitute your potato salad for a bean salad. And it was a recipe for like a lima bean salad, which
Fuck unbelievable. You.
Sounds unbelievably disgusting.
Fuck you.
Me.
Yeah, lima beans feel like a very like 50s food.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all of our top nuclear scientists came up with a new type of bean.
I mean, even now that we've actually learned how to cook vegetables and legumes, like beans still like you they better be like the top 10% of beans or they're probably going to suck. Like
yeah, no one's fucking with lima.
A 60s, like a cold bean salad in the 60s is a fucking horror show.
All I can think about is like the amount of mostly raw food that they were eating that was just like, you know, fucking just think about the standards of like a ground beef in 1950s.
Well, fuck. I think the meat standards were probably actually higher.
Oh, you think the meat standards were better than? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because you got your meat from an actual butcher.
That's right.
Instead of a supermarket back in the day.
Yeah.
But like vegetables and produce, almost all of it is going to come out of a can.
Yeah.
Jacques Pepin talks about like coming to America in like the 50s or 60s or something and like searching for the supermarket for mushrooms. And in that time, like you had to go to a specialty store to get anything that wasn't a canned mushroom.
That's crazy. That's like being in like a fucking deserted island now.
yeah. Eating MREs.
Yeah. So Don is sitting under a bridge, staring at a train, smoking a cigarette. It's dark out. He's got a cake and he's either thinking about like literally killing himself driving into a moving train, or he's thinking about getting on that train and going back to New York and fucking Rachel. And both things are absolutely relatable. Both things are like, I get it, bro. I get it. You know, he's also, you get the feeling that he's like, so like, I don't want to say love struck, but like lust struck and disaffected. And he's going to use this to make an advertisement. And
yeah.
And it's kind of great. He shows up finally at the very end, the very last scene. Daddy's home and he's got a dog and he's very drunk still. And Betty just stares at him and is like, I don't even know what to fucking say to you right
it's,
now.
It's also not a puppy. So like, where the hell did he
get
it?
He stole a dog. He clearly stole a dog, right?
I think that's what happened. Yeah.
He killed another family and stole their dog.
He killed a family and stole a dog. He has got a full grown dog and he's just like, I got a dog. And the thing is it looks groomed. So it's not a street dog.
Yeah.
He stole a family dog. And all as an excuse, you know, to like, I don't know, be like, oh, yeah, that's why I was out so late. The truth is he doesn't even explain himself, which is probably
doesn't
like
have to.
Well, he doesn't have to because it's like, what are you going to do? Divorce me like our fucking whore neighbor?
Yeah,
it is kind of insane that women at this time were essentially indentured servants. But he doesn't say anything, and then we fade out, and that's the episode. That's what happens. That's what had happened in Madman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that I missed, or do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, something we didn't talk about? Vince?
One thing that we missed, we didn't talk about the guy slapping the kid for running in the kitchen, right?
Yeah, no, we didn't. Yeah.
Just that sort of takes him by the arm and slaps him across the face.
Yeah. To be fair,
And your first thought is like, wow, people got away with slapping their kids. And then the other dad comes and he's like, oh, what'd my son do? So, oh,
must
he was
pretty bad for you to slap him.
Yeah. It was someone else's kid he slapped in the face.
Yeah. And then he gets a little almost emasculated. He's like, are you going to say you're sorry or do I have to also slap you? And he's just like, oh, if anyone's going to slap my kid, I've got to join in. it's pretty great. And then the greatest part is that scene ends with him saying, go get your mother and have her clean this up. I love
yes,
this.
Yes.
Not asking the kid. He's training the kid to ask his wife. Remember, when something breaks, the woman cleans it up. It's pretty great. Yeah. Was there anything else we missed? Favorite scene?
There's one of the kids is on crutches. We find out later
polio.
He has polio.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a Native American headdress. And Don refers to him as Chief Tiny Tim.
I missed that completely. But I remember seeing the crutches and being like, oh yeah, he must have, you know, had polio.
There's a conversation about polio.
Yeah,
that the hens are all having.
Yeah, they're all, you know, someone says like, he probably doesn't even notice he has it or something like that. Yeah, and then the mother's like, oh, he notices.
He notices.
And he's going to defeat it. And it's like, oof, man, I don't want to be in any of these people's positions. yeah. So that's the episode.
Speak for yourself. I want to fucking blast cigs all day.
I mean, listen.
None of these people work.
I know. I know.
Yeah. Again, yeah. The bar is so low. No one's actually ever doing anything. And then I want to be like, well, okay, this is a dramatization, and it wouldn't be very exciting to show someone just sitting at a desk, you know, actually like writing down notes or whatever. But like, I look at yeah. I look at my dad and my friend's dads, and they don't do shit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, it's the push pull. I mean, the entire concept of this show is that we're showing the American Empire at its absolute peak. Yes. When we had it easier than we ever had it before. And yes, even then you still had like the emptiness of like suburban capitalist living. You're still sort of alienated from your labors and all that stuff. But yeah, even then it's like, even then it's hard to watch it without a sense of like jealousy that there was just a woman whose job it was to like sit in the bed display at the department store, and she probably slept half the day and got like 6 weeks of vacation just to sort of stand there in case someone came in and wanted to look at some bedspreads or something.
Yeah, there's so many extra jobs.
Yes,
in this show,
handing them out, man.
Yeah, people are just like things like, I mean, and we have this in only the fanciest places, but like bathroom attendants and elevator guy and like stuff where it was just like, I don't know, make work positions for people to feel just slightly more superior than someone.
Like, now we have like, we made this AI chatbot to read your medical charts from your blood test.
Yeah, exactly. You have cancer. Bye. Unlike me, who will live forever. yeah, it is, you know, listen, we did all the Sopranos, which was about the fall of American Empire, and this is the peak, baby. This is America at its most American, and these are the days we're trying to get back to by racism.
I want to be paid handsomely to not work.
That's right.
Yeah, it sounds great. I want to be able to take a vacation on June 25th and not have anyone notice until July 11th.
Yeah, I want to fucking be able to make a 3D Jesus movie and have it compete with two other Jesus movies. That I feel like I could do.
I want to eat cold lima bean salad.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the problem, is we don't have enough Jesus movies right now.
I want to have two roof cage dogs. Just like Miss Mankin. All right.
A chicken in every pot and a dog on every roof.
And a Chinaman in every office. Okay. I'm sorry, everyone. It's the words from the show. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I think I would give this episode a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, I give it a B for boy, does Don look depressed with his life. Plus, that was cool.
Plus, that was cool. and Brendan, what did you give this episode? You had to give it a letter grade.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go ahead and give it a B plus. And I, you know, it's a good B plus episode, because I think this is where you really start to see some of the fun twists and turns that this show is going to make after kind of two episodes of table setting and sort of, hey, remember when everybody did this?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Solid B plus episode of Mad Men and solid A plus episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Brendan, thank you so much for talking about Mad Men with us. Where can people find you?
Email me, frotcastbrendan@gmail.com.
Hell
say
yeah.
Say hi. I'd love to talk to you.
He would love to talk. Email him, and a link to his email will be in the show notes. Patreon.com/frotcast, the $8 tier, finally It gets you a shout out. Shout out, first of all, to everyone out there who upped their tier. And also shout out to the people who stayed in the $8 tier this whole fucking time. $8 or more tier. So we're going to have to do something different this time because it's not like a street name. It's not like
It's a 60s prep school name.
That's right. Oh, I love that. Great idea. So let's...
You're playing tennis at the club with Pete and Cosgrove. This is kind of...
Yeah, no, I like it. It's
Midge.
Like, yeah, Squee, and all basically the nicknames of all the people that Brett Kavanaugh was crying about when he was saying exactly. that he couldn't have done sexual assault because he has a friend named Squee. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get started. First, we got Drew Landsman.
Landsman, more like land lubber. We call this guy pirate because we flipped it on him.
I love it. Okay, next is Pedro Orellana.
I mean, that's obviously the Spaniard.
All right, the Spaniard. Next, we have Addison Firth.
We call this guy or girl Firth, more like second. Call him Deuce.
Ooh,
call her Deuce.
I love it, Deuce. Next is Shell Shoe.
Shell, more like... Shelbyville. We call him Springfield.
Okay.
I mean, come on, you can't think of a prep school named Springfield. It's a good nickname.
No, it was good. I wasn't against it. Okay, the next few are I think gonna be harder. But I think this is STVND GLSGRDN Steven D. Girdlin.
We're going to call this entity Vowel because they don't have any.
Oh, I like it. I love it. Next is Everything Goes Dumb.
Einstein. We're flipping it on everybody today.
I like it. All right. Next is The Escape Fartist, M. Rogers.
M. Rogers. It makes me think of Mr. Rogers. I'm going to call this guy Cardigan.
Love it. Two more. We have Melissa Katsuzak.
Katuzak? I think it's Katuzak.
Oh, yeah. Katuzak.
That sounds like Central European of some kind. We're going to call her the Hun.
The Hun. That's great. I know what Hun is. And finally, Edo, a.k.a. Mark.
A Mark? Would you say the Rube?
Oh, yes, I would. And so would you. That is your shout outs for this episode. And if you want your own shout out, patreon.com/frotcast, $8 tier. Also, if you haven't heard your name after a few episodes of these, please give us an email and let us know because you might fall through the cracks. Patreon.com/frotcast for all of the bonus episodes and early access to these episodes. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy. Mad Men is a show about a guy named Donald Draper, who's a different guy. He's a different guy. Why, oh, why did he change his name? He's a different guy in the sky. And everyone knows he looks super fly. But Mad Men is also a show about people who drink at work and do harassment. This is a show about sexual harassment in the 60s and how the patriarchy really ran rampant for a long time, motherfucker, and how things started changing when women started entering the workforce, and then also at the same time the civil rights movement was happening. Mad Men is also a show about how white people don't control everything anymore.
anymore, because now other people have rights too. But this takes place in a time when mostly white people ran stuff, and they still do. Someone needs to fire this fucking drummer. This is the worst fucking drumming I've ever heard.
What up? We're sucking some dick. We're watching AMC and I'm flicking my clit. And together we're seeing a show about some guys who like to sell things like Coke and French fries. They sell Kodak film and they sell Lucky Strikes and they sell all sorts of things. And they say the word K, the K word about Jews that you're not supposed to say. Bit. This was a different place, a different time of day when anti-Semitism was okay and so people acted in a different way. Yeah, bitch, sucking on dick. This is the worst theme song I've ever heard, but I'm doing my best with what I got. Mad Men also stars this lady. Her name's Peggy. She's gonna rise real high. She's gonna rise to the sky, sky fly. She's gonna fly into the sky and everyone be like, damn, that's cool. Man, I'm gonna murder this drummer. Mad Men takes place when the people of America were going from normies to hippies. First they were regular, now they're hippies. They're gonna buy stuff hippy dippy. Everyone knows what skippity dip flippy, bitch. Sucking on dick. There's no way anyone ever listens to this outside of this show. Yeah, bitch, there's also gay guys who work in the place, but they're under disguise. Hey, I hope no one knows that I'm a gay man. And when they do, I hope they don't write me out of the show. That would suck. Hey, it's also about how women had therapy, but the therapists weren't keeping things confidential. And it has the potential to also be about empire and other stuff, and about how capitalism is fucking shit up and controlling us, man. Oh, well, it's about a lot of things, dog. This is how this fucking song ends? This is RJD2. I fucking loathe you. This is the shittiest song I've ever heard. I thought, like, the actual song would be good. Like, nah, this sucks. Solid B plus though. Thank you for watching. Oh, there's fucking more, isn't there?
Space, the final frontier, where we go.
Hello, this is Matt Lieb.
Hi, I'm Matt. Can I have some more cum, please?
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb's girlfriend.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb's girlfriend.
I'm Matt Lieb's girlfriend.
Hi.
I make him sit down to pee.
I do sit down to pee.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.